talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Joel Blank. I'm Patrick Crane, in for Jeremy. Voice of the Cougs.
Would you Branham. Stop that?
Well, it's only that or I got to call him Tucker Branham, and I don't want to call him Tucker Branham when he's going to be calling games of importance. We want to focus on the great work he does as a play-by-play guy for the Houston Cougars. I'm going to focus on that. Voice of the Cougs.
Look, and I know you do baseball very well. I'm just going to – I've said this before. I like to say it when Jeremy's not in. But I think Jeremy is one of the premier up-and-coming play-by-play guys in this country. I think that you're doing yourself a disservice if you've never heard him call a game. And I believe that as much as he's done to make himself a prominent personality talk radio-wise, his play-by-play is really, really good. And I'd be very surprised if some team doesn't come calling, whether it be college or pro, very soon, because he does a hell of a job.
He is a tremendous play-by-play voice. He is. He's a tremendous play-by-play voice. We played Jeremy's game-winning shot call. Was it a week ago? The game-winning shot call we played. So we played the hell out of that. Jeremy's a great play-by-play guy. We'll never take away from his tremendous skill in that department. Now, Joe George has some tremendous skill, and he's about to share it with us as we get into the Astros.
I'm sorry.
I like having you here, Pat.
How am I not aware of that? What is this tremendous skill, by the way?
He's going to show us.
What, he's going to take his shirt off?
No, that's not a skill. All right, we are doing our Astros countdown to opening day. We have six shows remaining. So the question for you guys today is this. Dana Brown sure sounded confident that he would lock up more than Christian Javier when he got the job. He kept saying that Kyle Tucker, Framber Valdez, Altuve, Bregman, he was talking to these guys and was hopeful he would get a deal done before opening day. With 8 days left, do you think Dana Brown will actually get any of these deals done? Or is Javier the only extension?
So I'll say this. The short answer is no. I don't think so. And I think that now he has bigger fish to fry because he's trying to see if there are ways to, in the short term, try to put a Band-Aid on what is a series of injuries that he wasn't expecting. But I would say that if he does do one before the start of opening day, I would lean Framber. I would lean a guy that I don't think is going to try. Again, I don't think he's going to try and break the bank to a certain extent. I think he really enjoys being on this team, on this roster, and he knows Javier is going to be here, and he knows the guys that he likes to hang with and be around and play with, and he knows they win. And so I don't think he's going to have a Scott Boras hard push, maximize money. And I think he's going to be more along the Yordan contract where it's going to make a whole hell of a lot of sense for the team, but it's still a good chunk of money that makes the player happy. And I think that if there's one guy of those guys that he can get done before opening day, that's the way I would lean.
Framber is 29 this year. Mm-hmm. And the chances of him, this is probably going to be the only chance he gets for the Buku Bucks, where he gets for that big contract. I think Framber understands his value. I agree with you. I do think he wants to stay in Astro. I think he likes being here. But I think he understands his value, and I think there's only so much of a discount he's going to be willing to give. Tucker is not giving any discount. Not happening. Not no way. Not no how. It's not coming down. So as Joel said, the short answer was no. The long answer is no chance in hell.
For any of them or Tucker?
No chance for Tucker. Absolutely no chance for Tucker. Very, very low chance for Framber Valdez. If there's going to be a guy, and I don't know that they want to extend him, that's part of it. I think Urquidy would be open to signing an extension, considering the shoulder injuries he's dealt with in 2021 that cost him half the season. The fact that he probably had his worst season as a pro really last year. A lot of inconsistency. They didn't even let him near a baseball in the postseason. So they were worried about his arm not being right. I think Urquidy, who's 28, I think Urquidy might be a guy you could probably get a team-friendly deal done with.
But do you want to? Do you feel like it's pressing and necessary?
I don't know that it's pressing. He's got two more years of arbitration left. And that's why I said I don't know that they want to do it, because they may look at this as, We're going to ride you to your break. We think at some point you're going to break. And when you do break, we don't want to be on the hook for it.
See, he's already had enough injuries with the shoulder after coming off of Tommy John back in his early, what was it, when he was with the Mets? Or previously in his career, he's had Tommy John.
Yeah, or he had it early in his career.
Right, early in his career, Tommy John.
Now it's his shoulder, not his elbow.
Yeah, now the two shoulders as well, that the same shoulder twice in one season. I just don't think, I think of all the pitchers, and I think you and I have talked about this, of all the pitchers on the staff, I think he has the least effective stuff in terms of strikeout stuff and a strikeout pitch. I don't think it's anywhere near a priority to lock him up.
And again, like if they did sign him to an extension, we know the Astros, you know, their 4-year, 5-year max extensions would essentially buy out 2 years of arbitration. And if you're going to get him at a very team-friendly number, A, he's an asset because he's cheap. B, he's an asset because he's a proven starting pitcher on a cheap contract, and that makes him a tradable asset. But again, I think if you're worried about his stability of his shoulder, you might just let him ride it out and see if he breaks.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him. I'm talking about the guys that Joe named. Of all the guys that Joe named, I think those are higher priority guys that have a bigger impact. So therefore, to me, I'm not worried about Nurkiti right now. I'm worried about a Fromber if I'm worried about pitchers. And if I'm worried about hitting, I agree with you. I think Tucker's going for a buku payday, and he realizes, I don't care what Yordan did you a massive favor. We all know that. But, and he wanted just the money now as opposed to, you know, playing out the string and then trying to get the max deal then. He wanted it now. He got it. Got a very team-friendly deal for the Astros. Tucker's not playing that game, and Tucker's looking to cash in. And that's why I don't think Kyle Tucker, when his contract is done here, is going to end up being on the Houston Astros.
No, I don't know if that's going to be the case. I don't know if they're going to value him enough in that regard. And look, every guy's situation is different. Yordan, his family had never even seen him play in the United States until the World Series. He took that deal so that he could take care of his family. And I understand that. The guys,
that's right.
Not everybody in baseball comes from means. A lot of these guys come from absolutely freaking nothing. And when they finally get that opportunity to get some kind of long-term guaranteed stable money, especially if, you know, they stay healthy, they're going to continue to get that money. They're going to take care of their families. Some of their families live in very, very poor towns in other countries. And they want to get him out of there. And they want to get him over here and be able to take care of everybody. So I understand why Yordan Alvarez took a deal. I understand why Christian Javier took a deal. Here's a guy who I'm going to throw a name at you. I want your opinion on this one, because this is the tricky one. Luis García. Garcia's 26.
What'd you say?
That's a good one.
Luis García really went from high A to the Astros and has equated himself pretty well, and has been a pretty good postseason pitcher as well in the limited time that he's been there, at least last year before he was pitching on fumes. So last year had a decent run in the postseason. He will hit arbitration one next season. So he hasn't even hit arb yet. You could buy out all of his arbitration, which means the early years of that contract would be very low dollars.
Yeah.
Would you to extend Luis García?
I'm absolutely exploring that. And especially, this is a big year for him. Because now with the pitch clock and now with the fact that he's not rocking the baby anymore, but it looks like it may actually be to his benefit. I think that, you know, if he gets into that from the standpoint of he shows that that's all good and he continues to pitch at the level he's pitched. And really, he has a blow up here or there, but they're not like massive crooked numbers when he does. I think there's a guy with his age and what he's already done for you and brought to the table. I think there's a guy you definitely explore locking up.
Yeah, see, I think when you look at the history of the Atlanta Braves, it's people are focused here on Altuve, Bregman, Tucker. The reality is what the Atlanta Braves are doing is locking up their Luis García, their Jeremy Peña. I think those are the next two deals from Dana Brown. Like, I think we see, just like Michael Harris last year from the Braves, that Peña gets the big deal. The only question I would say with García is, do you want to see him pitch 10, 15 games without the rock, the baby?
Before I do. That's what I said. It's a big year for
him.
Yes.
Like, you can't. I don't think you could sign him today without, in a full season, seeing this new motion and seeing if he's got it figured out, which I think we all think he will. But
no, and you should be encouraged by the fact that without the whole rock the baby thing, there's no change to his velocity. There's no change to his stuff. I actually like him better without rocking the baby.
I think I do as well because I think it's he's dialed in, he's focused, he gets a rhythm, he stays in it. I like it.
You know, you were a pitcher. You pitched in college. The more motion you add to your delivery, the harder it is to repeat it.
I see these guys in the World Baseball Classic that do that stop and start in the middle of their leg kick and do those other things, thinking they're throwing the hitter off. That would mess with me in terms of, you know, release point, delivery, and timing. That I just wouldn't want to mess with that too much.
No, you can't get all your momentum going forward if you keep stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. The whole point of the windup is to simulate like you're taking two steps as you fire. So as guys take them, and look at the – if you go back through history to the golden age of pitching, right, the 50s, the 60s, guys had massive leg kicks. They had huge windups where their arms would go way back, and they'd kind of hide the arm behind the body, and the whole body would come forward as hard as possible, and that's how they would generate big velocity. That's how they generate big breaking stuff. Rob Friedman, who does the whole pitching ninja thing, he put together an overlay of Sandy Koufax's curve and Clayton Kershaw's curve. When you watch the two side by side, you'd think Kershaw was a double-A pitcher. That's how much break Sandy Koufax had on a curveball that fell off the table lightning fast. Kershaw's got more of that sweeping curve. Sandy's curve was like a spike. It came and then, boom, it went down. He had a big delivery. You don't see guys have that kind of delivery anymore because if there's a guy on base, well, they're gone. But this, the whole idea being get all your momentum going forward. If you're stop, start, hold on, let me – to me, all that does is screw you up. And I agree with that. I think more – you're doing more damage as the pitcher to your own thing than you are to throwing off the timing of a hitter in that regard. All right, coming up next, Houston Texans have a new linebacker. And no, it's not the same guy as yesterday. Get to it next.
Hey, before we go to the break, I'll tell you about Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Look, I've been telling you about Frankie's. You got to go try the food for yourself. Don't just take my word for it. It's the best Italian food in the area. And it's absolutely fantastic. And I believe in the food because I believe in the owner. I believe in Chris Smith. And I love the way he does things. My parents grew up. When I grew up, my parents had their own restaurant. They owned it. They operated it. My dad was the cook. He made all the food as well. Chris does the same thing. He makes the food from scratch every single day. He makes it with passion. He makes it with love because he wants you to leave full and happy. And you tell your friends and you come back for more because you love the way it tasted. That's why I believe in him, because it starts with the food. Sure, the atmosphere is fine, and now that they got the new location, double the size, and a new bar as well, they can accommodate more people. But it all starts with the food, because if the food ain't good, you ain't coming back. And the food is delicious. Go to Frankie's Italian Kitchen TX.com right now and check out the menu. They have weekly specials. They have a great brunch on Saturday and Sunday. They have lunch specials. And then every single night of the week, the dinner menu with the Italian food is to die for. It's fantastic. Start with some wings or some pizza. Absolutely fantastic. The pizza oven gets the crust just crispy and right, but all those ingredients are fresh on the top, and it bakes to even perfection, or the wings taste absolutely out of this world. And then get to the main courses. The main courses are the ones that I've tried basically everything, and I can't stop raving about. From the lasagna and all the different options that you can go to from the Italian food menu, you're going to love everything at Frankie's Italian Kitchen. I do, and you will too. Tell them I sent you by. Check out the menu. It's Frankie's Italian Kitchen TX.com.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Here's Joel Blank. I'm Patrick Grady in for Jeremy Branham, voice of the Cougs. Get some news on the Houston Texans. They have a new linebacker. And no, I'm not talking about Corey Littleton, he was their new linebacker yesterday. Today, Denzel Perryman joins the Houston Texans on a one-year deal. as, look, the Texans played the market a little long. And, you know, after the first, you know, 5 days of free agency, the money starts to dry up because everybody's blown their cash on whatever one or two big players they're going out and getting. And here the Texans are going out and getting some quality players at, let's say, below market rates and not making any kind of long-term commitments. Joel, getting Perryman on 1 year deal, look, I think this is a solid move for Casario.
Well, this is where I want your opinion. Getting Perryman is great. It helps. It adds depth. It adds some talent. It adds a factor with a resume that adds some clout to at least a respectability to the locker room. But 1 year deals. Jeremy and I were talking about this yesterday. Just neither one of us are a fan. I just don't like the fact that there is little to gain for as much as you have to lose when you sign him to just a 1 year deal. At his age, you can still sign him to a 2 year deal. It's not a bad move. But at least if he balls out, then you got him for another year. It's kind of like what you did with Jerry Hughes and Stevie Nelson. You got a couple of year deal on a guy that still had something left in the tank. You didn't know as much about Hughes as you did Stevie Nelson, but you got something from him to where it's good. But Ogbo a year ago was that guy where he signed for a 1 year deal. He played fairly well, and you knew he was on the first ticket out of town after that because he was looking for a bigger, better deal. I like the signing. I just wish these guys were on 2 year deals. You know, just the same thing with Singletary and with Schultz. I like the deal. I mean, I like getting the player. I just don't think they're going to be around for the long term, or you're going to maximize getting the player if you're only signing them to 1 year deals.
See, I like the 1 year deal.
Why is that?
Because you're not making a forward commitment. If this guy gets hurt, I'm not stuck on the hook with him for all of this year, and then, you know, I still have him on the contract next year. If I want to cut him, I got to pay out, you know, another couple of million dollars or whatever my signing bonus was. If a guy is playing well on my team and my system and he fits really well, I can always extend him mid-season. I don't have to give it to him now. That left me my flexibility to maintain creativity as my team continues to grow. And look, I'm going to have a lot of young guys coming to this team. They have 12 draft picks. I don't know how many of those they're going to keep, but let's say they'll make at least 10 selections. Then you're, 12, 14 undrafted rookie free agents. They're going to have a ton of young guys come in here. Some of those guys are going to pan out. Some of them aren't. But at that point, next year, I can then kind of reset the whole idea of what I need, what I don't need. Go back into the market with however much money that I have, maybe almost the same as this year, and say, okay, you know what? I don't need a middle linebacker this year. But what I need is another edge rusher. I don't need another defensive end, but I need another safety. I don't need another tight end, but I need another slot receiver. Like, whatever it is, I can make that adjustment next year because I'm not hemmed in to somebody on a longer-term contract that's going to create dead money. The Texans have had so much dead money the last couple of years. They had over 70
sure, but they're
billion.
Escaping that. And now you're turning the page as well as a franchise. You've basically, you know, taken every lump that you could possibly take to try and dig out from Bill O'Brien's Grand Canyon hole he left behind, and you're basically back to almost even ground, right? You're not on the hook for a ton of dead cap and horrendous contracts. You're looking forward to the future. So now instead of getting those older guys to see if there's anything left in the tank on short-term deals, now you're looking to get a slightly younger guy that still has plenty left in the tank at a really affordable price. I think you did that yesterday when you saw them getting a tight end and all the different I said yesterday, I don't think they've had a tight end like Dalton Schultz since they've had Owen Daniels. I don't think that they've really prioritized tight end enough to what he can do, especially now when you're trying to give every weapon to a quarterback. But I think that the complimentary piece of a Singletary to a guy like Pierce, who's going to be a nice little, you know, kind of quick twitch guy, out of the backfield receiver guy that can help to complement Pierce. I think those were great moves, but I think they would have been even better if you got a Singletary instead of 1 year at 3+. Get 2 years at 6.5, 7. Now at least I get 2 years of time and service from him. And if he's playing well, sure, you could still look at extending him. But I'm not, even if things don't work out, I'm not on the hook for too much. I just like multiple year deals because it's going to take a while to get used to the system, fit in, do the things to build some kind of connection and some chemistry with your teammates. But once you settle in, if you're playing good ball, Caceres got to be smart enough that you're going to extend him. But what I don't like is that you develop a player and he's on a prove it contract, but not for you. The guys that they've been doing this for in a lot of cases, and especially the latest example with Ogbo, is you go and you do this because you're looking to get the rest of the league to take notice so you can play in a better situation with more money somewhere else. And that's why I just don't like it as much.
I think the prove it deal, a team that signed, the Texans signed it last year, 100% spot on, Joel. That was a prove it deal for somebody else.
Yeah.
I don't know that's necessarily the case right now.
With either guy, who are you talking about?
With the Texans. I don't think prove it deals for the Texans this year are 100% for another team, because we expect the Texans are going to be on the rise here. We've gone through 2 years of disaster as far as no draft picks, no cap space, guys signed to hideous contracts, dead money, Deshaun Watson. This has been a two-year, basically, they didn't renovate the house. They knocked the thing down to the studs, redug the foundation, re-poured the foundation, and now we're building the house back.
But see, we talked about this yesterday, and Joe was it brought up a great point as it related to Schultz. But here's the thing. I think Singletary's the kind of guy that you could – he's not an every down back. So I think that you can establish him as your complementary piece to Pierce, and maybe he's more apt to saying, I like what they're doing here. They have an actual role for me. It makes sense for me. I know that I'm not going to be a hot commodity across football. I want to be comfortable and get playing time. This is it. You could wrap that guy up, probably. But with a guy like Schultz, I think the first misstep was you got 3 years at double digits from the Cowboys and you turned it down. And I don't know what you were thinking and what your agent told you to where you thought you were going to get more. But now you signed a one-year deal for, what, nine? And then if you play well at all, when you hit free agency again next year, you're hitting free agency with four tight ends that are better than you are, that do more, that both block and receive and or do other things, to where I don't know that he's ever going to get the kind of money the Cowboys were offering him, and I don't know why he left. But if you're going to come to the Texans on a one-year prove-it deal, then I don't know what you're thinking you're going to get and how much you think you need to recoup, you know, to prove yourself. I don't think the Texans are going to be able to afford what he's going to want if he has a decent season this year, and that sucks. That's why I said for him, it would have made more sense to get a two-year deal out of the guy at nine. It's less than what the Cowboys were offering him, and now you've got an established pass-catching tight end for your quarterback.
Realistically, he may not have been open to a two-year deal, though. I mean, fair, if you just fair. Came off of, hey, I had a three-year $36 million deal.
33 to 30, yeah, something like that.
That he passed on because he thought he'd get more in free agency, and then it didn't happen. So that puts him into, okay, well, I've signed for 1 year. I can either, A, go back out onto the market, try to get that deal again. Like you said, there's a very good chance he might be fourth or fifth in that pecking order, depending on guys getting hurt, sure, and what kind of seasons they have. Or if he plays really well, you know, can he work out an extension with the Texans and pick up another, say, 3 years and $32, $33 million, because maybe get $10, $11 a year from that point on. And if he can be that safety valve, and the best tight ends, we were talking about them being a safety valve for their quarterback, if he can be that guy for who we expect is going to be Bryce Young, that he probably can play that into a multi-year deal with the Texans. Because if he has that deal with Young, and he's got that connection with Young.
But that's what I'm saying. What I don't like is the one-year deal. The other reason why I don't like it is if he does build a connection with a rookie quarterback and everything starts to click, and all of a sudden he walks because he wants more money and a bigger deal, now you're starting over from scratch, chemistry and otherwise, and timing-wise, with another tight end for your quarterback, and that might set him back a little bit, and I don't like that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair concern, but if everything goes as planned, right, you get a quarterback, he shows in his rookie year that he's good, he's going to be great most likely, you have D'Amico Ryans, he's changing everything, he's changing the culture, then you start to get into the territory of, like, how we always mention Mahomes. Like, people want to play for Mahomes. Well, people want to play for the Texans because of D'Amico, because of said quarterback. Like, even if they're not a superstar right away, you'll get these guys back, and you'll be able to get other guys to come in here. But, you know, we've also seen, like, a real trend of just one-year deals in free agency. I think it was Josina Anderson tweeted out that she talked to an agent that's very unhappy with the amount of one-year deals going around because that's what everyone's giving up. Like, it might just be the new reality of the NFL.
Well, part of it is, historically in free agency in the NFL, I'd say it's about 65-70% of guys who sign long-term deals as free agents don't pan way they did before they got that deal. They don't fit the new team as well.
Well, but teams are paying and overpaying for what they've done, not what they're going to do. And the return on investment never ends up being what you expect it to be.
But that's part of the part of the joy of hitting free agency is now you get to cash in. You know, now that you are no longer held under team control, yeah, you're going to get overpaid. Ideally, if you're a top player, you're going to get overpaid because, look, I was the guy who was the man. I'm coming to you. I'm giving you credibility. I'm making your fans happy. I'm probably going to help you sell tickets and merch and all that type of stuff. So, yeah, you got to overpay me a little bit because, hey, now I'm a desired, I'm an in-demand commodity. You know, guys who have four and five suitors, they're going to get overpaid the most. A guy like Devin Singletary, there's 10 Devin Singletaries on the free agent market every single year. Those guys always sign for a 1 year, $4 million, 1 year, $3 million.
Oh, running backs don't have the value.
You can get another guy like that. I understand what you're saying about Schultz. I think that's on Schultz. He didn't want anything more than a one-year deal. But if you're the Texans, essentially, you have an exclusive negotiating window with him from now until the start of the new league year where you can keep him under contract. You can get him extended before anybody else ever gets a shot. We'll get more into this coming up next. Killer Bees.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Joel.
Yeah.
So, Texans, they add Denzel Perryman, who is a, very good linebacker, asked T. Higgins. Damn near knocked his head off last year.
Wow, what there?
You talk about guys on one-year deals, and I'm not as big opposed to the one-year deal as you are, but I understand what your thought process is there as far as, if you think a guy is good enough to come into your team, well, don't you think he might be good enough to come into your team for more than 1 year? I think they're just trying to keep their flexibility for whatever they're going to be. As you get through the draft, they're going to have a lot of guys who they're going to pick. They're going to have a lot of guys who they sign as UDFAs, and they want to see what they fill. They've got a ton of holes this year. They can't possibly fill every hole. But you're going to try to get as many young, talented guys in there as you can and supplement them with veterans. So we'll see what their veteran needs are in a year from now. And look, I think that if they can bring Schultz back, I think they will because he's a solid tight end. And as you mentioned, since OD, you had Ryan Griffin, who dropped
everything.
Up,
yeah. Got a little hairy in Nashville during the draft 1 year.
Yeah. CJ Fedorowicz, as soon as he became a viable receiving option, unfortunately wound up with like three concussions in 1 year and it ended his career. That's a guy who was a little bit of a late bloomer, but was really starting to come into his own before he wound up with the head injuries, unfortunately. Jordan Akins, another guy, took a really long time to develop. We got his best season out of him last year. And again, he's not looking like he's made back in.
Yeah.
And good for him if he got paid.
No question, because there was always uncertainty about what, if anything, he could amount to with this rebuild. So consistency was an issue. But here's where I want to ask your opinion on something I said yesterday. The problem that you got with Schultz as opposed to some of these guys coming up that are going to be free agents in a year, but also as it pertains to this team, is he is a pass-catching tight end.
Yes, he is.
He is not a blocking tight end. So you're going to need another tight end that is a big-bodied, blocking tight end, probably block first. It would be a benefit if they could also catch the football. I said the kid from Georgia might be a guy that you look at in terms of your long-term solution because he's a massive human being. I think it's Washington. Massive human being, but he also has really, really good hands. To where, while Schultz is your guy, and it truly could be a win-win where Schultz gets to prove to the rest of the league he has a higher value, more so of what he's looking for in a multi-year, and he goes somewhere else. But in the meantime, he kind of buys you some time to get a kid you drafted ready so that in a year's time, that kid takes over and as the starter if Schultz leaves.
I think taking Catoriano might get a run at that. He's 6'6 and 260 pounds.
Have you seen the kid from Georgia? It's Washington, right, Joe? Yeah, Washington's a massive human being.
And I'm not saying that they won't go there. I'm just saying I think Toriano's a guy who they took. And he was hurt a lot before he finally got to play. And he showed you he's got some hands. He's got some chops. And he's a big dude. He's 6'6". He's 260 pounds. He doesn't cost him a dang thing because he was a fifth-round pick. He might wind up getting a shot to be that guy who's probably blocking more. Because, like I said, Schultz is definitely a pass catcher. He's not in there to block. But I could see, you know, Katorion getting a shot to show that over the summer in training camp, if he can be that guy. And look, if they have an opportunity to draft a guy, like you said, the kid from Georgia, they have an opportunity to draft a guy like that.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they won't. I don't think anybody on the roster is preventing them from taking a player like that. There's nothing that says they can. It's, hey, is that guy going to be there? But I don't like the...
Where would you take him? Like, are you going to take the second pick of the second round? Are you going to take a tight end?
No.
Do you think, Joe, is there anything in your mind either? Do you think Washington is a guy that slides to the third round? I don't.
I don't know. Tight end's tough because I think it just all starts with what happens at the beginning of the draft. Because it's just this giant trickle-down effect.
There's three top-tier tight ends in this draft.
And I agree. And like today, like Jackson Smith and Jigba from Ohio State ran a 4.5, 4.5, 3.40. It's not great.
It's
but
not
like,
great.
But most people, I think when you watch them play, it's not concerning. The tight ends, where they slide, I think depends on where the wide receivers start going in the draft. If you see JSN and Addison and these guys and Quentin Johnson go in the teens and 20s, then you're also going to see the Zay Flowers of the world, those guys. So you might get a tight end in the third round.
I think have
plenty of assets to move up and get a guy.
See, the kid from Utah, the kid from Oregon State, and Michael Mayer from Notre Dame, those are the top three tight ends.
So
no matter what happens with their receivers, I would think that one for sure, and potentially two tight ends go in the first round. The third probably goes high in the second round. And then, to me, it's the question of when do teams feel the need to go to that next tier and take a kid like Washington, who really wasn't getting all the reps at Georgia, but if given the reps, looks like he could actually get better as an NFL player. I would say if he's there in the third round, that's something you highly consider.
Are you talking about Washington in the third round? Yes, I would absolutely.
Yeah,
I'm definitely considering that. Michael Mayer is the number one tight end prospect at Notre Dame. Dalton Kincaid is a highly rated tight end because he's considered to be a high-end receiving tight end who runs great routes. Luke Musgrave is the kid from Oregon State.
Yep.
And then Tucker Kraft from South Dakota State.
What's the kid from Utah?
Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah, Kincaid.
Those are essentially your top top tight ends in the draft. I wouldn't take one before a third round.
No, I don't know. I mean, I think if you can get Mayer's going to be gone.
Yeah.
So it just depends on how you value the need. I think that, you know, again, we've talked a lot about it, and Branham actually talked me into the fact that I don't think there's a wide receiver one in all these wide receivers, or that the chances are that they're all pretty much lumped together on similar tiers, but I don't think anybody's the standout like next year when you take Marvin Harrison Jr. And say he's the guy head and shoulders above everybody. He's going to be a wide receiver one instantaneously. I don't think there's an impact guy like that. There's a lot of guys with similar skill sets that all have the potential to be pretty good in the NFL. So you can get one of those. And like to Joe's point, you might not get the top of the list, but your top of the list wide receiver might be different than every other team in the league's top of the list wide receiver in this draft class. And so if you get Zay Jones or you get the kid from Houston, you get Tank Dell later on, he still could probably help you in a multitude of ways, but where do you take them? And then how do the tight ends kind of fluctuate in where you would take them? I just have a sneaking suspicion that Washington's going to be gone before we get to the third round.
It's possible. I mean, he currently grades out as a top three tight end prospect.
I assume you think the Texans should take a wide receiver.
At 12?
No, somewhere in the first two rounds.
At 12?
You think it's at 12?
At 12.
Okay.
And I love JSN. I mean, you saw that guy play in the Rose Bowl. He was unstoppable. Hey, Joe, let's play a game here for a second. Take out your phone.
Oh, boy. Don't ask him about the last picture he put in there.
Take out your phone.
That could be messy.
Open up the stopwatch on your phone.
Okay.
All right. When you open up the stopwatch on your phone, I want you to hit stop start just as fast as you can and tell me what the number is.
0.13.
Okay. That's the difference between a 4.5 and a 4.37 over 40 yards. When guys go, oh, he ran a 4.5. That was slow. Yeah, not really. All right, Keenan Allen ran a 4.71.
Wouldn't that be...
And nobody's looking at Keenan Allen and going, that dude's slow.
That's not the difference between a 4.5 and a 4.3.
0.13 is the difference
between... Oh, 1.3. I didn't hear the one.
He said 0.13. Right. So that, bang, bang. That's how fast, over 40 yards, that's the separation. That's not separation. You know, so when you guys say, oh, he ran a 4.5, oh, that's slow. You just saw how slow that is. Bam, bam, boom. That's it. That's the 4.37 and 4.5. Nobody running a 4.5 is slow. And because I know his name comes up on this station fairly often, Keyshawn Johnson, who was very famous for saying, you ever see anybody catch me from behind, ran a mid-4.5s 40 and had a hell of a career. Keenan Allen ran a 4.71. He's had a hell of a career. You don't have to run 4.3 to be able to play wide receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, for sure. I bet you, like Jerry Rice ran like a 4.6.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
4.4?
Yeah, Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice.
I don't know. It just, he's always looked kind of...
Well, because he was he was tall.
He wasn't like sprint
but
fast.
But boy, he was... I mean, he was smooth. I think he ran a 4.4, 4.5.
You want to know what it was?
What was it?
4.71.
What, when he came out?
Jerry Rice ran a 4.71.
Wow. Boy, that's a... From a visual perspective, it looked like it was a lot faster than that. But I get your point.
Nobody ever caught Jerry Rice from behind.
Nope.
You know, and part of that is, you know, it's an unnatural thing to run out of the blocks. Your game speed, how fast you can accelerate from a cut and then accelerate, is way more important to me than how fast you come out of the blocks. Because if you're good at coming out of the blocks, you'll have a better time than somebody who's not good coming out of the blocks. You never come out of blocks. I mean, that's... Why they do that doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, you know, this is, you know, what we're talking about, like the underwear Olympics.
So if you, whoever you draft this year, first of all, I know we got to go to break, but whoever you draft this year, is he instantaneously your wide receiver one?
That's the guy you better be drafting.
Robert Woods is on this roster. Robert Woods is the cheaper version of Brandon Cooks, a veteran wide receiver with experience. Again, a guy trying to prove himself is going to want the football. I thought the minute that they signed him, he was the heir apparent to wide receiver one because that guaranteed they were getting rid of Cooks.
Now, wide receiver one is pick 12.
Not Robert Woods.
Not Robert Woods.
Okay.
I think Robert Woods might be wide receiver two because Nico Collins seems to have a little trouble with durability.
Right.
Mechie's
your ideal slot.
Yes, and Woods can also play the slot. But you want Mechie to be in the slot. Woods can play inside, outside. Collins is pretty much outside only. Whether you take Quentin Johnson,
Collins
JSN,
is closer to outside looking in than he is outside.
Yeah,
only.
He might be. I think it's great that you see Collins with the acrobatic catches and how he can high point a ball, but his inability to stay on the field is definitely an issue. Guys don't get healthier as they get older, so that is a concern to me. But for me, I'm a Texans. I'm getting my wide receiver one when I pick 12. I guess we got to do that whole break thing here.
Yep.
Because we're a little late. So he's Joe Blank. I'm Patrick Crane, in for Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees.
Hey, guys, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about mybookie.ag. We got the Sweet 16 this weekend. It is a big time to be looking to make some big money by taking advantage of all the games and all the opportunities brought to you by mybookie.ag. Of course, with all those tournament games, they got player prop bets as well as picking the games themselves. That's absolutely fantastic because now if you've got a hunch or you've got some inside information and know something about a certain player and you think that from the points and the three-pointers that made – and the assists that they're going to total, those prop bets you can cash in on and you can score quickly. Those are the kind of bets you can get at mybookie.ag. You can also take advantage of the fact that they take care of their customers. Right now, they're doing it again. You make your first deposit with mybookie.ag, put in the promo code bet975. Almost instantaneously, you can get up to 50% of what you deposit in into your account as a cash bonus that you can use to bet on more games and have more chances to win. It's that simple. Put $1,000 in, get an extra $500 in your account. More money in your account, more games to bet on, more chances to cash in. They take care of you. And they've got all kinds of different things going on. It's not just the NCAA tournament. NBA games, NHL, PGA golf, XFL, MLS, and a whole lot more. You got a hunch right now that you like someone to win the World Series? I wonder if they wear gold jerseys on the opening weekend. Whoever you like, if you want to bet now, you can cash in later when you bet at mybookie.ag. Whatever you do, always use the promo code BET975 because it's a gift that keeps on giving. And right now, with your initial deposit up to $1,000, you can use that promo code and cash in with an extra 50% bonus. As I always tell you, and I will never stop, bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag, and it's the promo code BET975.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Joel Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton in for the voice of the Cougs, Jeremy Branham. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5. No, CC, that is not true. But it is good to see you in the chat. All right, Joel.
Yes.
Almighty, all righty. The Astros could be looking at another year of all right-handed relievers. Gage was optioned. He was the left-handed reliever who was probably pitching the best for them.
Does that surprise you?
That he pitched well?
Well, no. Does it surprise you that they're putting him in Sugarland already, and the fact that he's a loogie, and Dusty has always clamored for at least one lefty reliever in the bullpen, a la the mistake but had to be made with Will Smith a year ago just to get rid of your boy Odorizzi. I thought that they would at least keep the one lefty on the whether him, Blake Taylor, someone. I thought they were going to give Dusty one lefty, and it's just kind of surprising to me that it wasn't Gage because they went out and got him.
They got him for nothing.
Nothing, right.
And I think part of it is a numbers game. He had options. There's a lot of guys who don't have options. One being Phil Maton. But at the same time, if you look at this was the best bullpen in baseball last year. And the Astros righties, for the most part, are really good against lefties. So last year, Ryan Presley against right-handers, 184 average, 520 OPS. Against lefties, 178 average, 513 OPS. And he's the guy who gets a lot of swings and misses. He throws a lot of ground balls. He's not somebody that, let's say, the shift is going to impact because there's a lot of strikeouts, a lot of grounders because of the breaking stuff. Rafael Montero against righties, 225 average, 560 OPS. Against lefties, 158 average, 507 OPS. Now, I'd be a little concerned about Montero because he's coming off of his career best season. And therefore, I don't know that those numbers are repeated.
I expect him to regress a little bit. And I know they overpaid him, so he's going to be under the microscope more. I just don't think he's going to be what he was a year ago. And a guy that has a plus-plus fastball, I don't believe in his other pitches as much as other people, including the Astros. I don't expect as much. But I do hear what you're saying because I agree with you. I think that they have righties that get lefties out better than lefties do. And I always knew that Seth Martinez was Dusty's security blanket a year ago, whether it be mop-up duty, but everywhere you put him, with the exception of one game against the Yankees when he gave up a bomb to Aaron Judge, he did exactly what Dusty wanted him to do, and he did it rather effectively to where I figured all along he was going to be on this roster. I just thought that going out and bringing in an outside lefty that looks like he still has game left in him was a guy that Dusty was going to like. And like you said, he hasn't been pitching bad in the spring. It was a little surprising to me that they already made the move.
I think part of that is since they've been starting Ronel Blanco in spring training and stretching him out, that they're looking. And I never looked at the idea of Ronel Blanco as a starter as being legit. But could they stretch him out and make him a multi-inning reliever who throws really hard? Because that was one of the things I liked about Devo, was he was a multi-inning guy. Now, Devo didn't necessarily throw really hard, but he could give you multiple innings. Brad Peacock could give you multiple innings. They didn't really have that guy right now, and Ronel Blanco now becomes a guy who can give you multiple innings in the underbelly of the bullpen, along with a guy like Seth Martinez. And I think if one of those two guys, because remember last year, Blanco pitched very well in spring training, got to the big league club, was absolutely brutal and wound up back down in Sugar Land. Mm-hmm. So, you know, among Martinez and Blanco, which one of those two guys, if they both pitch well, they both stay. If one of those guys slips up, I think Matt Gage could very quickly be back up on the roster. I think the ability to throw multiple innings for Martinez and Blanco right now is why they are projecting to be in the bullpen.
Plus, you have a surplus of riches in the bullpen. I mean, you've got so many different options. You already got guys pegged for the 9th, the 8th, the 7th, the 6th, and even then a surplus of guys that are effective above average major league relief pitchers. So the last couple of spots are going to be like mop-ups and or, you know, spot duty here and there, but not like someone you're going to totally count on like most other teams when they're trying to dissect who they're going to put on their major league roster.
No, and that's kind of one of the things that we saw with Dusty last year, how he manages the bullpen. You don't see guys throwing 3 days in a row. Right. Winning, losing, doesn't matter. You don't see guys throwing 3 days in a row. You don't see them pitching 3 out of 4 days. You don't see him pitching 4 out of 6 days. He doesn't work his bullpen like that. And that's why they stay effective. They don't wind up being gassed and then being asked to go out there. And he'll throw a game away if he has to. We saw that. It was the Martinez game against the Yankees. It was the last game of the series. And they had played, 7 days in a row against
top-notch
against
opponents.
The Mets and the Yankees, and they had played 10 of 11 days, Mets and Yankees. So there were a lot of bullpen games. And rather than burn the guy, say, you know what, Martinez, he gets it, he doesn't get it, I'm not burning an arm. And when the Astros are losing, many teams are going to have to bring in at least a setup guy at some point because somebody has to pitch the innings. Well, they don't have to do that. They can let Renel Blanco throw 2 innings, maybe even go 3 innings. If they're up big, Renel Blanco can go get a 3-inning save. Mm-hmm. Seth Martinez can go give you a 3-inning save. You don't have to go to these guys for multiple innings. Realistically, the guy that you'd think would be the most replaceable is Maton, but Maton's got one more year of a guaranteed contract. They're going to try to, let's see, can he give me a rebound year? Can he be a little more consistent? Can he not punch a locker? If Maton,
who knows, the punch may have allowed them to restructure some things in his hand to where he can be more effective.
He can restructure some things in his head to be more effective. Maton's probably going to wind up being a guy who pitches when they're losing.
Yeah. I said, mop-up duty is something that maybe he never considered in the past that might be something on his horizon.
Stanek would probably be a top-3 reliever on most teams. He's 5 in the Astros pen. He's not even a setup guy for the Astros. He is a middle reliever who will occasionally get setup work if other guys have pitched too many days in a row. Mm-hmm. And that's a guy who pitched to a 1.15 ERA last year despite walking five guys per nine.
I'm still mesmerized by the fact that a guy that had that low of an ERA set the regular season ERA record for the Astros, was highly effective, suddenly couldn't find his way into a playoff game.
It's the walks. He walks 5 guys per 9.
I mean, and I've always been quick to say, look, you can tell what kind of day it's going to be for Ryan Stanek within 4 pitches.
Yeah.
If he's locating the splitty. But at the same time, even then, with that ERA, the numbers say, and I know I'm not a straight analytical guy, and you know this, but if I am just going to go by the numbers here, it never blew up in his face to where I don't know why suddenly you don't trust him in the playoffs.
And that's one of the weird things, that when you put...
Because he can go triple digits on a fastball.
When you walk that many guys, and Stanek has a big strikeout number, right? He strikes out like 11 guys per 9. But when you're walking 5 batters per 9 innings, and that's always been the bugaboo with Stanek, because he walks way too damn many guys. But he wasn't giving up the hits. And he's pumping at 100 miles an hour. And yeah, if he walked guys, he might walk 2 guys, but he'd find a way to get at it. To see him not, you wonder, was there something wrong with him that they just didn't tell us? Because that Dusty would just suddenly have no faith in Stanek at all when the calendar turned to October doesn't really make any sense for as good as he was. So I don't know if he was he dealing with some fatigue? Was he having one of those things where he just was struggling to locate his pitches? I don't know what his bullpens looked like because the Astros don't tell us. There had to be a reason or multiple reasons.
I experienced discomfort with all the things they don't tell us.
Could it really just be as simple as he walks those guys and in the playoffs, Dusty Baker knows in that moment he's going to yank them, and you don't want Rafael Montero coming in with one out and two guys on because Stanek walked two guys. Because in the regular season, you can have the patience for Stanek to work through it. But do you want to yank him like you likely would in the playoffs and then give that next reliever not a clean inning? That's kind of like where I was thinking. Like, if he's not hurt, maybe was the justification, because it was odd. It was like maybe the weirdest thing of the postseason.
It is odd. But you know what? The back end guys in your bullpen, that's their job sometimes. You're there to put out the fire. You're there to be what they used to call the stopper. When the other team has a rally that's about to get going, you'd go to your stopper, and that guy came in and got a big strikeout or got a big ground ball and got you out of the jam. If you're Rafael Montero or you're Brian Abreu or you're Hector Neris, man, that's your job. You, two on, one out, get out of it. So, you know, for Stanek, for a guy who throws as hard as he does, get out of it. Hopefully not get in it. Well, we're 2 hours in with another hour to go. And coming up next is time for Weird Take Wednesday. He's Joe Blank. I'm Patrick Creighton in for Jeremy Branham. This is the Killer Bees.